this is where Texas politics gets interesting. Here again are two guys named Jason, some great guests, and cold Texas beer for another smart conversation on Y'allitics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.
Hey, you know, I am a sucker for good marketing.
You are a sucker for good marketing, and I'm thankful for that, actually.
Because a buddy of mine told me about these. So the beer we're having today,
yeah,
I'll let you read it.
It's lukewarm, but that's okay.
It's not lukewarm, dude. It's been in the fridge all morning.
It's called the 903 Brewers Path of Totality. Look at that.
It is a stout aged on hazelnut, coconut, and vanilla. Three of your favorites.
Oh, my gosh. You can't get it any better than this.
So that's our first beer.
And we're timely with it. It's our first beer.
We're
going to
have
more.
Two beers today.
You were a double sucker for good marketing then.
Don't tell the bosses that we're having two beers, and don't tell them we're on the roof.
Yeah, we're on the roof
of the Y'allitics World Headquarters.
I begged Jason, by the way, to let me do this episode shirtless because I've got to get ready for summer, and I am whiter than that shirt that you're wearing right there, and I've got to start getting that in shape because, you know, I want to be at the pool at some point.
This is a family-friendly podcast, so I apologize if kids are in the car or if you're feeling sick at your stomach now and have to pull over right now.
So I like this second beer here. It's also from 903 Brewers. It's called Black Hole Sun Black Lager. And we are going to sample both of these.
We are?
If our bosses are listening, we're only drinking one full can, if that. So we're only going to have portions of both.
Is that your story?
Yeah, that's the story, and I'm sticking to it. These are brewed, by the way, and canned in Sherman, Texas.
Texas. Cheers, man.
Cheers with two beers.
I'm having
double-fisted
the
cheers.
The black lager here, the Black Hole Sun.
I want to taste both, just to kind of give an idea. Okay.
Black lager's good.
That's the Black Hole Sun. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah,
and let's do the, what's the first one called again? The Path of Totality, which a good chunk of Texas is in with the eclipse this time around.
Yeah, on
Monday. Let's do cheers again,
cheers,
I guess,
man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Oh, that's dessert.
Oh, my gosh.
That's just dessert right there.
Jeez.
That's really good, though.
That's like a winter beer.
No, in all honesty, don't you see that as a dessert?
100% it's a dessert.
Wow, I think I've had desserts that are less sweet.
So here we are at the 1st of April,
yeah,
and it's... feels like 110 degrees outside.
It does. You know,
we have sun as we record this podcast.
Yeah, there's not a cloud in the sky, and we are sitting up on top of a roof that is white. So everything is reflecting back, so we're getting double the sun, which means I could be getting that savage, you know, not tan, but off-white, we'll call it.
No,
right
don't
now,
look
but
at
that's
the...
not happening.
Don't look at the sun yet unless you're putting your glasses on.
I'm not going to look up at it either way. Although this thing is a total blackout. These are good glasses.
These are really good glasses.
You want to pay attention to the glasses that you get for these eclipse events because, you know, you only get two eyes, you know, and they got to stay with you.
That's it.
Long after that 5 minutes or 4 minutes of darkness.
I'll have the dessert a little later, but let's, the black lagers, you love the dessert beer.
I'm going to alternate here, you know, kind of take the edge off that a little bit.
So we've been talking for a minute here about Ken Paxton, the Texas Attorney General, and whether people have them all wrong.
Well, I think a lot of people have underestimated him.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, though, I mean, he seems like a confident enough guy. To be honest with you, though, I'll bet you that there are days that even he wakes up and looks in the mirror and thinks, I've gotten this far. Like, you know, let me keep on pushing ahead because he has overcome some hurdles that did not look like he was going to clear them.
He didn't. Of course, he beat the Texas Senate trial, the impeachment trial. He was acquitted of the 16 impeachment charges last September.
Yeah.
He did decently, pretty well on Super Tuesday.
Yeah.
Defeating people who were against him. He didn't win all those races.
He
backed a lot of candidates, put money into it. He did defeat three judges.
Yeah.
On the
Texas Court of Criminal
that's
Appeals.
That's it, CCA, yeah.
Which is the highest criminal court in Texas. The Supreme Court is the highest court when you deal with civil matters.
And then most recently, as one of our last podcasts, Brian Weiss, the special prosecutor in the securities fraud criminal charges, those charges were dropped.
Yeah.
So
that was huge because those charges have been hanging over him for
nine years
now. You know, in part because he dragged out the process too, but those were serious charges as well. And I would even say he's overcome some other hurdles in there with those, you know, allegations in the background. He's won multiple elections for attorney general.
By large margins.
Yeah, and vanquished known names on the Republican side, not even on the Democratic side, on the Republican side, he had primary challengers who had big names.
Louie Gohmert, Ava Guzman, the former Texas Supreme Court
George
Justice.
George P. Bush.
George P. Bush of the Bush dynasty. Yeah, he has done really well, and he's done much better than I think a lot of pundits thought he would. A lot of Democrats thought he would. A lot of what some Republicans thought he would. I've been watching on social media. There's a state representative we had on this podcast who a lot of you guys probably listen to, Jared Patterson, from North Texas.
Yep.
And he is a Republican. I would never in the world call him a rhino Republican.
No.
But he said something on our podcast a few weeks back or a month or so back, where he said that he thinks that Ken Paxton is a flight risk.
Right.
Because these criminal charges were coming up, supposed to go to trial here in a couple of weeks. That did not come to fruition. So
that
a lot of people were saying,
jumped. Hey,
Representative Patterson, you were wrong about that, wanting him to eat crow over that.
Yeah.
But
Paxton was a flight risk in that case because he flew right over that hurdle, it turns out. He turned the tables on it and did it again.
That dessert beer is already getting to Wheeler here. he's starting to crack dad jokes.
Sweeter it
for
is,
us.
The faster it hits you.
So the conversation we've been having in all this is Ken Paxton the most powerful Republican in the state of Texas?
You asked a pretty powerful Republican about that.
I asked Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick about that last fall, right after the Texas Senate acquitted him. Here's what Patrick told me at the time. Take a listen. People are telling me they think Ken Paxton is now the most feared politician in the state. Do you think that's so?
I haven't heard it. I don't know. I haven't even thought about it, to be honest with you.
So Patrick kind of blew it off. He balked at the idea of that.
No powerful Republican in Texas likes to say that another Republican is the most powerful.
And I understand that. I get that. But 100%. But Democrats, at least one in particular who knows this office really well, says absolutely Paxton is the most powerful Republican in the state.
Yep.
No one is even close to him.
He wanted to take him on before, but didn't make it out of the primary. And it, it kind of sounds, if you talk to him, like he is about to try to take him on again. The question is Paxton going to be in that job anymore if he decides to take him on? So we got Joe Jaworski, former mayor of Galveston, on the line. Galveston County, by the way. Yeah, he's a big attorney down there. Galveston County, by the way, is my birthplace. And so this is like going home to get him on the line.
So that's where they have isn't that where they have that big monument for you? No, that's Sam Houston is what I'm thinking of.
Oh, are you thinking
of Pasadena?
You're thinking
where's
about
your
across
monument
the ship
down
channel.
There?
You're talking, you thought that the big obelisk represents
is that
me.
Not yours?
No.
I thought that was yours for some reason.
No, that big obelisk
How
does
did Galveston
not represent
County
me.
Pay homage to you and all the things that you've done for
it? Well, they haven't. maybe after this podcast.
This might be it. So Joe Jaworski is, of course, the former mayor of Galveston. He's a Houston attorney. He was a Democratic candidate for attorney general.
Be again.
In the last election. And we asked him this question.
Yeah.
So we called him up at his Houston office and just curious what he had to say about this, because he's gotten really vocal lately. Take a listen to what he said.
Hey, y'all. This is where Texas politics gets interesting. For another smart conversation on Eolitics.
Joe, it's good to see you again. Let's start with a basic question, kind of the title of the podcast here. Is Ken Paxton unstoppable?
Jason, thank you. Great question. The answer appears to be yes at the time. Right now, he is unstoppable. I mean, you tell me, of the top four state officials, Governor Abbott, Lieutenant Governor Patrick, Speaker of the House Phelan, and Attorney General Ken Paxton, who of those four, other than Ken Paxton, has conquered all three branches of government? And just in the last 9 months, he's on a 3-0 streak and earning acquittal in the impeachment trial, winning under any circumstances, you might define the word winning, in his revenge tour on March 5th, and now skating in Olympic fashion, winning the gold medal, getting out of his state securities fraud.
Well, you could say that the first two, the Super Tuesday turnout and the acquittal and the impeachment trial are political. But when you look at what happened with the special prosecutor, it made me say, well, listen, are people getting Ken Paxton all wrong here?
Yeah. So what happened in 2015 may in fact predate most people's knowledge of who Ken Paxton is. I mean, I know he was a House member and briefly a senator up in Collin County, but down in Houston, I mean, who's Ken Paxton? So synonymous and simultaneous with his becoming attorney general, he gets indicted on a first degree felony, which is, you know, just below murder. And but over 9 years, that morphs into this political attack. Well, it wasn't political at the time. I mean, his own home county grand jury indicted him. But through a series of machinations, the district attorney had to be recused, the judge had to be excused, and then things get very political. 9 years later, he doesn't even have to admit guilt. Now, that sounds pretty powerful at the time.
I want to ask you about that just because, you know, that's pretty fresh still that we saw that deal move through. A lot of people had questions about that. Of course, in these cases, a lot of times you'll see a deal that's made before it actually goes to trial. But I wanted to get your take on that deal that Ken Paxton got. He was easily, you know, potentially facing the rest of his life in prison. Now he has to pay a substantial fine, take some classes, et cetera. But that's way different than what he could have been facing. You used to be a clerk for a judge at the U.S. Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. Your grandfather, for people who don't know, was a special prosecutor in Watergate. What is your thought about what has happened here?
So it is a pretrial agreement, not even a plea agreement. I mean, we can't even say that he cut a deal as we know it, because cutting a deal in criminal law usually indicates some admission of guilt. Here, he just has to do three things that will be no trouble for him at all. So credit to his attorneys. And I would simply say it's a disappointment that the prosecutors agreed to this. Managing expectations in law, and I say this as a mediator, Jason, is paramount. Criminal law could not be more different than civil mediation. I get it. But for 9 years, and certainly powerfully for the last, let's say, five, I mean, you'll recall my colleague Justin Nelson, who ran a wonderful campaign in 2018 on the Democratic ticket for attorney general. His typical punchline was, this guy's indicted. And that's, you know, where the mantra began. And now we can't really say that other than in a historical context. To directly answer your question, let's look at what he has to do. He has to do community service. And I would say to you, that's probably the most severe thing he has to do of the three. The second is 15 hours of advanced legal education. Well, I just had to do that in the last 12 months. Every lawyer who's not on suspended status or retired has to do that. His is all ethics, which is fine. And that's a showpiece rather than any real punishment. And then $271,000 in restitution. That sounds like the amount of money he owes somebody. And I assure you, he'll be able to raise that from private funds with one phone call.
Keep that legal hat on for just a moment here. I want to ask you about this, you know, purported grand jury that's been going on in San Antonio for some time. You know, we've seen reports that perhaps they've been investigating Ken Paxton, but we've seen these reports for several years now. As someone who used to be a clerk for a Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals judge, what do you make of that? Does anything ever come of that? I mean, it's been a long time that we've been hearing these things.
Well, federal grand juries are serious business. And, you know, whatever you may think about a grand jury, a federal grand jury is going to be double the secrecy, double the intensity. They usually are not short appointments. I think they are elongated, like sometimes 2 years. When a grand jury is dismissed, I think the charges go with it. So there will be at some point the end of the universe for this federal grand jury in the Western District of Texas. Our understanding, the public's understanding, due to some intrepid reporting, is that witnesses that were involved in the impeachment trial have been seen coming and going from the courthouse when the grand jury's convened. The U.S. attorney, assistant U.S. attorney in the Western District, is handling those interviews. Evidence is being collected. You know, Nate Paul is going to go to trial in November, right after Election Day.
And this was the guy at the center of the impeachment trial, the friend of Ken Paxton's, who he intervened for.
Correct. The other significant member of the inquiry when you're talking about Ken Paxton's corruption. I mean, you know, obviously the securities fraud indictment is over now, and it's going to be, assuming he completes this minimal service, you know, it'll be a thing of history. But originally, Jason, you'll recall that was part of the articles of impeachment. And Dan Patrick, the presiding judge, decided that those would be excised and put on hold. When he was acquitted on the remaining charges, someone made a prompt motion to dismiss them, not to postpone them any longer, but to dismiss them. So that's no longer going to be subject of impeachment, although it could have been. Mm-hmm. So the federal grand jury, I bet, is doing a yeoman's job of keeping things very confidential. Nate Paul's deadline to be tried or cut a deal, and I doubt he's going to get away with just community service, is going to be around Election Day. So think about the drumbeat that is going to be occurring nationally, but certainly in Texas, all the way through Election Day in November, with Nate Paul in the background having to cut a deal with his fabulous lawyers in charge and the U.S. Attorney's Office, and then a grand jury using potentially his testimony to make a decision on Ken Paxton.
Mm-hmm. Well, Joe, let me ask you point blank. Do you expect a federal grand jury to indict Ken Paxton?
I have no inside information, and thankfully.
How about that outside information? What do you think? You're an attorney.
I think I'm going to lean yes. And that's, you know, 25% wishful thinking, but 75%, like you, having watched the impeachment trial very carefully and not giving much credibility to the acquittal. I mean, let's face it. It was a political pardon bought and paid for by Ken Paxton's supporters, who will probably help him pay the $271,000. I'm just speculating, but it would certainly make sense.
And Jason and I have talked about this, and I've talked to a few other people, other Republicans, about it as well. And I'm like, what in the world are the feds waiting on? What's the grand jury waiting on? There can't be anything else huge out there that we haven't already seen in the impeachment trial or with the securities fraud charges that Brian Weiss was involved with in Houston. And the thing that keeps, you know, people keep coming back to is they say, well, they're probably waiting to see if Nate Paul's going to turn on Ken Paxton. And if he does, that will build the case that they'll take to trial. If he doesn't, though, do they have a case?
Right. I certainly believe there's two items I'd like to bring up. One is we all have heard about how the Department of Justice and the FBI are supposed to let things play out and not do things that would affect an election. I think that also probably works with state impeachment trials and state securities fraud criminal trials. I mean, what's left? The state bar proceeding? I don't think they're going to let that very, you know, cloudy proceeding stop them from doing their job. So now I think there's nothing in front of, if you will, like there's no airplane at Newark Airport waiting in front of the Department of Justice. You know, the runway's clear. If they want to take off, they can. I think it's just a matter that the feds will act when they feel like it. And, you know, those of us who wish to venture a guess as to when some charges may or may not be announced by the grand jury, you know, we're speculating at best. But I think that any obstruction is out of the way. I know that Nate Paul's trial or deal is going to come around Election Day, November 5th or November 8th, 2024. So I would say the next 7 months, keep your eyes open.
So if we didn't have enough to keep a watch out for in this critical election year, we have to put a pin in that one, too. Of course, this is not a year when Ken Paxton will be facing re-election. He won handily back in 2022, beating the Democrat in that race, Rochelle Garza. She had previously beaten you in the primary runoff pretty substantially. What happened there? Would you think about doing this again?
Yeah, I'm one of these guys who's not coy about, you know, future plans. And so I can solidly say we're considering running in 26 for Texas Attorney General for the Democratic nomination. What happened there? A spirited campaign. Rochelle didn't do anything wrong in the primary. She beat me soundly. I think there was a bit of a question that there were five people running. And, you know, to her credit, you know, she is an attorney. But in this case, was the only woman running, and certainly a Latina, which is a powerful thing in the Democratic primary. So nothing wrong with that. And the four of us split the rest of the votes. I was happy to make a runoff. And then, you know, you'll recall the Supreme Court decision in Dodd was leaked. And that was Rochelle's strong point. Absolutely. Reproductive rights is something she can speak to. She's done some great work on that. So it was her time.
And what happened? I mean, he rolled her by 10 points in that November election.
Yeah. And again, you know, the money wasn't raised. The pivot from primary to general election was not made. And that's a question, you know, you would certainly ask her. But we were all disappointed in the outcome. Beto lost by a large margin. She lost by a large margin. So it just wasn't the Democrats' year. It was a midterm for Joe Biden, right? And midterms are usually cruel, especially the first midterm in an incumbency. So Greg Abbott, Ken Paxton, Dan Patrick, they are in a well-fortified bunker, and it's going to take something more in 26 to remove them.
Let's talk about the bunker for a moment here. I want to ask you a question that I asked Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick last fall after Ken Paxton was acquitted. And the question to him was, is Ken Paxton the most powerful Republican in the state of Texas?
My answer is yes. I've had a chance to think about this over the last couple of weeks and really look at it from any way you want. I started off by saying, who of the top four statewide officials can say that they've mastered all three branches of Texas government? I mean, certainly Ken Paxton is a statewide executive, having, as you said, rolled the opponent in the last election. Well, let's look at the legislature. He just basically owned the Texas Senate in his political pardon, his acquittal. And now he went on a revenge tour and has completely impacted the new lineup in the Texas House. In fact, one of his defense attorneys, Mitch Little, is all but elected in November. Furthermore, you're going to see the final chapter of that domination of the legislature in the outcome of Dade Phelan's election. I mean, he's literally inhabiting that district, virtually with his funder's money and his endorsement. Well, let's talk about the judiciary. I mean, can Dan Patrick or Greg Abbott even possibly approach the following? Ken Paxton in 2021 was on the wrong side of a Court of Criminal Appeals opinion, an 8-1 opinion, by the way, saying the legislature violated separation of powers in giving the attorney general direct action to prosecute election crimes. They said, wait a minute, this is the district attorney's function, each county's district attorney, which is under the judiciary.
Right.
And that's in the Texas Constitution. This law the legislature passed some years ago, giving the executive this primary duty, that's just absolutely unconstitutional. Well, he didn't like that. And Jason, both of you will recall that Ken Paxton then published the contact information for the Court of Criminal Appeals, you know, like Mike Lindell or something, saying, everyone call the court and harass them and tell them to change their mind. No lawyer worth their license would ever do that, but a powerful politician sure would. And so then he has the three Court of Criminal Appeal judges who are up for re-election vanquished.
Including the presiding judge.
Absolutely. And here's my question on the judiciary. Let's look at the other side of the judiciary, the civil side, the Texas Supreme Court, which presently holds a mandamus action on whether Ken Paxton will give his deposition in the whistleblower case in their hands.
Mm-hmm.
Granted it essentially saying, yes, you have to give your deposition. Then when the date and time was decided by the trial judge, Paxton ran that up the appellate flagpole. And the Supreme Court, after, you know, watching this revenge tour, you know, proceed toward March, said, why don't we just wait and see what happens after March 5th? Well, they still had that appeal. They postponed that deposition like 24 hours before it was going to happen. Will the Texas Supreme Court cower?
Let me ask you this, Joe. If Paxton is the most powerful Republican, as you have laid out there, why in the world do you think you could take him out in 2026 in the ballot box?
Right. I think the extreme wing of the Texas GOP is anathema or against the values of the state of Texas. Ken Paxton's the most powerful Republican in the Texas GOP. It's true. But how do we know that? From a primary just last month where 2.2 million people voted. Now, the Democrats had a little over a million. So let's just call it 3.2. Well, based on historical trends, there'll be 12 million. who vote in November in the presidential cycle. That's essentially 9 million more voters. So since, Jason, we don't have registration of party affiliation in the state, the only way we can like declare our partisanship is by voting in a primary. Well, 9 million people chose not to do that. Also, the trends are most people are announcing that they're independents and they just don't follow the party line. But let's assume a third of those 9 million are going to be partisan anyway, even though they didn't vote in the primary. That leaves 6 million people to decide this election. When you have such an extreme dogmatic platform that Ken Paxton is an author of, and demonizing people that are literally like less than 0.1% of the population of Texas, and basically asserting a church-like dogma that his main donors are insisting upon, I think most people who were born here, who are moving here, who are voting here, are going to be offended.
Yeah, and you know, that kind of dogma sits very well with primary voters who make up, of course, as you just mentioned, a sliver of the general electorate. Ken Paxton, though, seems to have an iron grip on those GOP primary voters in this state. And a lot of times they're the ones who hold the keys to you getting into office if it's an uncontested race. You know, what do you make of that? That doesn't seem to be loosening at all. In fact, it may be tightening.
Well, and you know, to respond to that and to finish Jason's original question, it is on the Democrats to do something about it. I mean, it'd be great if there was a third and a fourth political party with any viability, but there's not. So it's really up to the Democratic Party to nominate candidates, in this case for attorney general, who can draw independent support, moderate, or let's just use the word repulsed Republican support, because they just can't live with Donald Trump or Ken Paxton. And they really are very similar. And of course, motivated Democratic voters to create a block that will outnumber whoever the primary Republican voters are that support Paxton and those who just reflexively vote Republican in November. If Democrats can't do it, as Chris Tomlinson down at the Houston Chronicle says, then the Democratic Party really has no business calling themselves a political party.
Let me ask you about a commentary you wrote in the Galveston County Daily News. Interesting is kind of zooming out on this entire issue a little bit here. And I love this one line you wrote. Compromise is a virtue, but the X-rated political theater of Texas government is sinful. You're a native Texan. You have deep roots in this state. Do you ever think that we're going to see compromise again?
If our government is to serve the people, we're absolutely going to have to. Let's go back to the judicial version. And Jason, I appreciate you recalling that I clerked for the federal courts. Let me just give a shout out. God bless him. Rest his soul. John R. Brown, a Dwight Eisenhower appointee in 1955, because as a private maritime lawyer for Royston & Razor, he was one of the few people supporting the Republican ticket in Texas in 1955. Well, none of that mattered to me in 91. I was just proud to work for such a famous jurist. But John R. Brown was his name, and he taught me a lot. What I would say to you is, in Texas, compromise is king when you come to getting things done. In court, you have an oppositional job. You've got the plaintiff and the defendant, or the criminal defendant and the prosecution, and a judge make sure that the rules are fair. It's oppositional, and from that, justice is created. Here in our legislature, let's just say, there ought to be a fair, balanced government where robust debate occurs. You know, we go back to this, maybe it was a myth, but I like to think it was true, where, you know, Ronald Reagan and Tip O'Neill would, you know, argue vehemently, but then at the end of the day, respect each other with a cocktail. That doesn't happen anymore here. It's not even happening in the Republican Party, much less between the Republicans and the Democrats. So the dysfunction in Texas government is directly related to the GOP's civil war. That is going to spoil like a bad piece of fruit, fall off the tree, and what will be left is an opportunity for another party, perhaps the Democratic Party, to put a candidate and an officer in statewide office and show the people what balanced government is. Return to that.
Yeah, they've talked about that for more than two decades now. How confident are you that Democrats will get that back together again and will be able to do that again?
So, you know, I'm confident and I'm willing to put my time, my heart and my money and my supporters' time, heart and money into a campaign to do something about that. That's why we're considering running again in 2026. That's obviously way too early to announce anything because there are people in the 24 cycle who deserve our time, heart, and money. And so, you know, it's all about waiting. But I will say that the Democrats, if you look at the last several presidential elections in Texas, the numbers are getting closer. And, you know, I don't have them off the top of my head, but if you look at the last three presidential elections, the Democrat and the Republican are getting closer and closer. And I think that's a trend.
Yeah, you know, 2026, though, it might be very likely that you wouldn't even be running against Ken Paxton because, you know, there's been a lot made, you know, these suggestions he's been making, you know, going back to this GOP civil war, that he'll actually take on fellow Republican John Cornyn for his U.S. Senate seat. Cornyn recently responded, "Hard to run from prison, Ken." You know, but again, that was before this deal came along, at least in the securities case. So, you know, my question there, I guess, is, you know, does that make you more likely to want to jump in? And secondly, what do you think of the possibility of U.S. Senator Ken Paxton?
Yeah, I'm actually counting on it. I think you know, I mean, Ken Paxton absolutely has been targeting Cornyn on his, have you noticed his mm-hmm. more prominent social media role?
Yeah, even criticizing his brisket the other day. Yeah,
oh, absolutely.
I mean, he's trolling him.
That may be a bipartisan criticism, actually.
you know, it didn't look good. I will say that.
Sorry. And I'm not sure. I don't know if Cornyn's trolling us. I mean, well,
right.
But right. What I would say is, imagine, let's just assume for the moment that Ken Paxton is going to shift and run for Senate, which I think he'll have to resign the Attorney General's office to do that. That's a resign to run situation, which means Greg Abbott will appoint his, you know, immediate successor. And you would imagine, as Greg Abbott often does as governor, when a judicial vacancy occurs, you know, he kind of picks the fair-haired successor and says, okay, you'll be running in the next iteration. Now, who's that going to be? I mean, when we just witnessed, you know, a spectrum of talent, to be, you know, clear, George P. Bush, Eva Gussman,
Louie Gohmert.
Louie Gohmert, you know, not all similar at all, you know, a big spectrum there, none of which were acceptable to this, you know, motivated extremist GOP primary base. And until we do something about these primary elections, which, you know, I don't think is going to happen in my lifetime or anytime soon, then the angry, motivated extremist base is going to decide who their candidates are. So my point is, who is Greg Abbott going to appoint that's going to satisfy that base? To if Guzman, Bush, and Gohmert and all of them are not satisfied, are not satisfactory to the base. So that's going to be a really interesting political conundrum. And maybe he'll punt by saying, look, I'm going to appoint you, but you got to promise you're not going to run, you know? So anything could happen, but based on what I'm seeing, I think Ken Paxton may have decided he's outgrown the Attorney General's office.
And do you think he'll win if he takes on Cornyn?
Right now, yes. You know, I mean, which is, you know, that and five bucks will get you, you know, a fast food meal. But what I'll say is, well, used to at least. But what I'll say is right now, I mean, if the election were held today, of course he would.
Joe, how do you see the Republican Civil War ending? Because I don't see it ending anytime soon. But what's going to bring it to a conclusion?
Certainly the next, you know, engagement on the battlefield is going to be the runoff in late May. Dade Phelan's election. You know, obviously he's doing a great job of raising money and on social media, you know, which played a big role in Ken Paxton's political pardon in the Senate impeachment trial, you know, the Texas Ethics Commission right now is considering filing, you know, legislation or rules that say, hey, if you're paying influencers on social media to advocate for a political position, that's paid political advertising. Yeah. You have to put a disclaimer or something. So every time Dade Phelan raises money and has a fundraiser, Michael Quinn Sullivan or someone like that is going to put it on social media and shame him for it. And in a low turnout runoff in the primary, that makes a difference. What's going to end the Civil War? Either scandal or just an obnoxious platform. We're seeing...
We're talking about scandal in this whole podcast, and a lot of people would argue that the GOP platform has gone too far. People who aren't Republican might argue that. I mean, we're already at that point, aren't we?
Yes, we are.
And yet we don't see turnout change tremendously here.
Yeah.
That is extremely disappointing. And, you know, I think it's just so ugly now, and that the messaging is so pervasive and head pounding that a lot of people are just humanly turning away from it. The Democratic Party is, until further notice, and I'm proud to be a member of it, is going to be the only alternative. Let's be honest. Let's be, you know, blunt. And so it is a heightened responsibility of Texas Democrats to nominate the best and the brightest. And by that, I mean those who can raise money, those who can tirelessly campaign, and frankly, communicate a message humanly that makes a difference to these 9 million non-primary voters.
Well, Joe Jaworski, former mayor of Galveston, potentially a future candidate for attorney general here in Texas. It sounds like that is getting closer and closer. Thanks for taking the time out to talk with us about this. We really appreciate the insight.
Oh, Jason, thank you for the invitation. Absolutely.
Click subscribe and get Y'all-itics every week. Y'all-itics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.
I think that the title of this podcast needs to be, you thought that big obelisk represents me?
I like that. I like that. It's the heat and it's the sweet beer that's really getting to Wheeler right now.
It is.
For that, we apologize. And if you're still bearing through this with us.
Yeah. And of course you are. But I think that was a very interesting take by Jaworski there. He has less to lose than Lieutenant Governor Patrick when you ask him the question, you know, is this the most powerful Republican in Texas? Because he's looking in from the outside as a Democrat, and Democrats haven't been able to overcome Republicans for statewide office here in a very long time. He's given, a little bit more of an unvarnished view there. I wonder how that will sit, though, with other big name Republicans in this state. We know it probably doesn't sit well with John Cornyn, the senator, who Jaworski was saying right now, if Paxton took him on, he'd probably beat Cornyn.
I don't know that Jaworski is wrong about that.
Yeah.
I mean, look how well Paxton did.
Right.
Paxton is a big Trump supporter. Trump supporters are the base of Republican voting in this state. So I don't know that he's wrong about that.
Does he get past the rumblings, though, about that grand jury in San Antonio?
True. What's going to happen in the federal case for Ken Paxton? Will John Cornyn run for another term? There's a lot to consider. And how often do we ask people, hey, are you going to run for this office?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know.
They always him and haul. Yeah.
And what did Jaworski say?
He pretty much said, yeah.
He said,
I don't want to put that word in his mouth, but it was as close as you get to yeah without saying yeah.
And you should see the surprised look we had. Rewind this and look at the surprised look if you're watching this.
And that's just my normal face.
Yeah. I think we both kind of had the wow factor on that.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens with that. But at the end of the day, for Jaworski to admit that Paxton is the most powerful Republican in the state, when he's talking about trying to run against him, really sets up a David and Goliath type battle. Mm-hmm. If Paxton were not to run for Senate, if he were to run for a fourth term as Texas Attorney General.
Well, you know, it's been David against Goliath for a lot of Democrats for years here in Texas. We'll see if they get any closer. I mean, it hasn't been really close in most of those races.
If you guys are watching the Eclipse on Monday.
Yeah.
It's Monday, right?
Yes.
On Monday, then pick up this 903 Brewery. This is the Black Hole Lager is 6.4%.
The Black Hole Sun, it's called.
The Black Hole Sun.
And then for dessert, you've got, again, the Path of Totality.
You see what it is? 15%.
Stiff. And you got to look out for this one because it's sweet, so you don't know what's happening.
Speaking of looking out, after having these two beers, we got to walk back down the stairs, this ladder over here.
Those are steep stairs,
too. To get back down to the Y'all-itics newsroom.
We don't recommend that anyone get up on a roof to watch an eclipse and drink, by the way. That's it's a terrible idea. we're going to have help getting down.
And we'll end it on that.
Yeah, because I've got a farmer's tan now, thanks to you. I could have been working on this all along.
I should have brought my sunglasses up here. But remember, don't look directly at the sun. Don't be like some people and look directly at it.
Yeah, and one more admonishment. Yeah. Subscribe while you're here so that you get these every week when they drop. Thanks, as always, for watching and listening.
Hey, y'all. Want to see the Jason's Talk Politics? Download the WFAA Plus streaming app for your smart TV and watch the latest episode of Y'allitics each Wednesday night at 8:30.